From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 26th day of July 2019. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets and the weather and check in with Emerson Nafziger, Extension agronomist from the University of Illinois, about conditions across the state. In Chicago, corn futures were lower for the day. September down 4 cents at 414 and a half. December at 424 and one half down 3. And July futures 2.5 lower at 442 and a quarter. August beans up 3/4 on the settlement at 883 and a quarter. November at 901, a penny and a quarter higher. And the January futures at 914 and a quarter, up 1 cent. Soft red winter wheat down 3.5 for the day. Live cattle futures in the October at 109.90, unchanged on the afternoon. And the feeders 87.5 higher. Hogs were up 80 cents. Earlier in the day, I talked with globalanalytic.biz's Mike Zuzulo.
You too. Thanks for doing this early, Todd. I've got a trustee meeting for Amelia Earhart, and no, we're not still looking for her. This is more business stuff.
Well, you know what? Tell me about that, because you're there in Atchison, Kansas. What are you involved in?
Well, quite a bit of stuff, but this particular is the Birthplace Museum, since she was born here. And for a town of 10,000 people, they've done just a wonderful job, and it's a real prideful thing to be part of. I'm very proud of being a trustee of it. And they have both local and the 99s are what they're called. And those are the female aviators from the early 20th century. Very nice group of people. They're headquartered in Oklahoma. And they are the ones that have continued the legacy of what Amelia and some of the other key aviatrixes had started back in the early 20th century. And they were known as the 99s. So you can find them on a website. And they we share the responsibility of keeping her legacy going. And with the recent involvement and excitement in her recent appearance in off the New Guinea area and off the Papua area, you know, that area of the Guam, and expectations that maybe we found some more information. There's been more interest in Amelia, and she does have a very interesting history and a very interesting life. So encourage you to, when you come out, be sure to take a look at it.
How stunning. How cool. So I'm going to make a transition, an aviator's transition, because weather is the deal, right? But let's start with that in agriculture. Weather here in the United States and Europe both has been impacting prices. How?
Well, it's interesting. It's not been impacting it hardly at all. And that's when you take a seat back from this week. And, you know, we're going into the end of the month. We're down about 30 cents in wheat, a nickel in corn, and roughly 10 cents in soybeans for the month. And we've got literally Paris hitting 109 degrees actual temperatures this week. We've got the Netherlands hitting all-time highs. We've got Germany hitting all-time highs. Areas of Northern Europe are hotter than Baghdad or hotter than Cairo, Egypt right now. And we here in the United States have not had any really good conditions to report. In fact, we lost a point in corn and we've had very little rain. And the updated GFS model is starting to look more like the European, mostly dry for your area and on east, that crucial area of the Corn Belt this year for the next 7 to 10 days. Yet we've seen the deflation trade take over once again, with the dollar making a new 8-week high, the S&P 500 making a new all-time high, on talk that all the central banks are going to cut interest rates. And so we are essentially selling commodities and buying equities, because the central banks of the world and some of the trade data that's come out and the lack of the U.S.-China trade negotiations going forward and making progress, we're all hunkering down now in the financial world that we're going to see less world commodity trade, more equity market trade, because money is going to continue to be so, so historically cheap. That, I think, is coming to an end. I think we're probably climaxing on that deflationary trade as we close out the month of July. And I think that because we are getting hit with some key supply, key production areas that are losing supply at this point.
Yeah, so this has been a real problem. And we just have had flagging demand. And we can see it in the numbers, export numbers from the United States.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good distinction to make. Both the export inspections and export sales this week were a little bit different than what we've gotten used to. And I think that's why the corn's down 15 going into the close, and the soybeans are down about a dime going into the close for lead month, and the spreads have been wider and weakening. Soft red wheat, though, I think, Todd, is still our leader, especially with Sovcon. You know, that company's been around so long, it's still got the Soviet part in its name. But Sovcon came in with wheat exports for Russia down over 6 million tons versus their prior estimate. They're now down 3 million tons for exports for wheat coming out of Russia versus USDA's last report. So as soon as the dollar peaks, I think wheat takes over as the lead month and the leader to the upside, and lead month wheat should be able to regain that $5 handle. So still looking for the wheat low, even though the corn crop's probably getting hit worse than anything, and probably beans are right there with it.
Now on the demand side, anything new on ASF and East Asia?
Yeah, we did get that attaché report come out, I think it was Thursday afternoon, and the trade did take a real hard look at that. It didn't have a lot of new information in it. It did say, though, they've lost about, I believe it was 6 million metric tons of pork consumption and pork demand, and they're going to be losing another, I think, 10% of pork production in 2020, around 21% this year. These harder numbers, Todd, I think help the market digest and not have an unknown and a black hole out there that the funds can just keep selling. And I think that in part is why the soybeans been able to recover some this week, even though the Chinese purchases were next to nothing. And once again, very, very disappointing. So I do and am glad that the attaché report came out about African swine fever, because I think we can start to get a handle on how much demand we've lost, and now we can move forward.
What about beef cattle in the United States?
Well, we didn't establish trade this week. We had bids at 109, offers at 115. Weights are going up seasonally right now, but we have a tighter cold storage numbers. I'd be really, really surprised if we didn't see a strong demand and packers really step in next week as a result of the lack of cash trade this week. I would also say that the feeder cattle are now hitting $35 a hundredweight premium to the fat cattle. That's the best level and premium feeders have had against fats since November of 2018. So if feeders keep going up, which I think they're poised to do in the longer term, I think we'll start to see the fat cattle get drug up with them. But we, like you said a minute ago, got really caught up in the weekly export sales. Not so great for pork or for pork or beef, and kept a lot of the longs and potential longs out of the market, especially with those currencies.
Any final thoughts for row crop farmers before I let you go?
I would say watch the basis levels, especially new crop basis. If we are looking at a futures low, especially in the soybeans, I would be looking at the idea that if basis has popped for you for October, November delivery, wouldn't surprise me if that basis would then widen or weaken if the futures market started to go up. So looking at maybe doing some basis hedges and basis contracts for new crop beans, especially in those tighter basis areas from Champaign on eastward.
Hey, thanks so much, man.
Thanks for having me.
Mike Zuzulo is with Global Analytics and Consulting out of Atchison, Kansas. Find him online at globalanalytics.biz. You know, most Friday mornings, I join the commercial ag team on a statewide conference call and listen in to the specialists and some of the educators as they talk about what's been happening in their areas. Emerson Napsiger was on the call this morning. He's an extension agronomist here on campus, and I recorded a portion of what he had to say about this year's crop, corn and soybeans, in Illinois.
I think it does correspond. If you look at the rainfall map for Illinois, it does show that that's coming out of Iowa and sort of through here is really the driest place in the corn belt. And that's where, of course, quite a bit of the corn was planted late. And that corn is not reaching tasseling probably quite as quickly as we might have expected it to. Then what that means is that they are also not elongating stems as fast, because stem elongation is really sensitive to water stress. I should say to fairly severe water stress. Most stem elongation takes place at night with conditions like this, but if that can be slowed down some, and what it might mean with this crop that is in the area most affected, and it's by no means, you know, more than about a 20% or less of Illinois corn area, and it's in some of the better soil areas as well, so that has an effect too. But it may mean that these tassels are a little slow coming out, and they may not get out of the leaves quite as much. It takes a lot with today's hybrids to really damage pollination. You know, we saw the crop that was planted in the middle of May that I talked about before. you know, it hit pollination running and long silks and this aggressive silking and really most of these silks are out by the time they get pollinated. And they, I was observing when we were out in our field the other morning, defoliating in a little study we have here, that, you know, these silks don't even turn brown very quickly. You start wondering if they might be overdoing a silk production a little bit, but that's, I guess, better than the alternative, which is not have them come out. That's pretty much not happening at all anymore. You know, we can get serious drought issues like we had in 2012 and silks don't come out. But if silks don't come out, then that means a lot of times tassels aren't coming out either. Everything can kind of grind to a halt with this crop. Just as a sideline on that, we have seen in some of the dry periods in the past, what I called sort of suspended growth. And corn doesn't have a great ability to do that, but we have seen it rain after a period of stress that sort of limits growth, and then growth can kind of come back. And it usually means yield has been affected negatively, but they still yield something, where with older hybrids, we probably wouldn't see them yield anything. So that's the big guessing game is going to ramp up now about what the yields of this late planted crop are going to be with so much of the crop planted late. And the objective yield estimates that the NASS makes are going to be really difficult this year, because a lot of the fields are not, you know, that's supposedly an August 1 estimate. My guess is what they'll do is, you know, be out there. So they usually make those in late July, the objective yield estimates, which means they go out and count plants, count ears, and count kernels. And you could count kernels on these that are finished pollinating now, but they still haven't, kernels really haven't started to grow on those mid-May plantings, or even the April plantings. They're not, haven't grown very much, and we could still get some abortion on those. So that's, it's all a little bit of a waiting game at this point about how many kernels there are going to be. And the weather forecast, you know, in terms of rain coming back in next Monday, Tuesday, doesn't look like a really abundant supply of rain. I think the Nutrien thing I saw this morning said 7/10 or something, you know, expected over the next week. And that's not, you know, a lot of Illinois doesn't really need the rain. Where most of you are, that's the case. We're above normal, actually, for July in a pretty good chunk of Illinois, north and south. But through the central part, Quad Cities down to here, we're definitely not. So we're below. So that'll be the main thing to look for. I talked in the article about the soybean crop as well. And, you know, the more days we have like this, where this crop is probably under some degree of stress in many fields, and where even where it isn't, it still hasn't kind of cut loose with that growth spurt that we normally see with soybeans. And all in all, the soils being too wet or too dry and the crop planted so late, you know, we're still looking for the possibilities of decent yields, I think, with soybeans. But that story has hardly even begun yet. Certainly with the canopy that's out there right now, we would not be very optimistic. We need to get some canopy growth, some leaf growth on this crop, and it's just not happening very fast. In the afternoons, I know that we're, you know, I talked about that slight droop, and the lack of leaf color, the deep green color is pretty much not there, which isn't unusual for a crop that's, you know, a foot tall. But normally this crop would look like this about the second week of or third week of June. And so we'd have good optimism. that it's going to go ahead and form a canopy. We obsess a little too much about canopy. A lot of people have observed that you can get good yields without, you know, a real heavy canopy. But the best yields are always with a heavy canopy that forms early. And that is certainly not what we have with this soybean crop this year.
That was an excerpt of Extension agronomist Emerson Nafziger's comments to the statewide teleconference of the commercial ag team here at the U of I this morning. Now, coming up next, let's talk about the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He is with Agrible and Nutrient Ag Solutions. Hey, Eric, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
So I want to start with the rainfall that came up. And maybe as many places as not. So what have we gotten the last few weeks?
Well, last week when we talked, it was all about the severe weather rolling through the northern plains and extreme heat that we had here. And parts of the northern plains from both North and South Dakota through Minnesota, Wisconsin, we saw a lot of damaging winds a week ago today, but also saw incredible rainfall amounts. So very, very wet there. Meanwhile, we were kind of sitting here high and dry, although the humidity was quite high. So I wouldn't say we were dry, but in terms of precipitation, we didn't get much. There's only really been, in parts of central Illinois and even parts of western Iowa, just a few decent rainfall events where some folks have gotten some localized heavier rainfall, honestly, since about the 6th of July. So when I look back over the last 2 to 3 weeks, I see a pretty sizable chunk of Illinois and also part of Indiana and a part of Iowa that did not get much rain to talk about at all. In fact, some places are sitting somewhere around 10 to 40% of normal rainfall. And it's a crucial time period to get it. Even the light rain showers that went yesterday through parts of Iowa, then into the early morning hours into Iowa, these were widely scattered and relatively light. So this wasn't the solution. You know, this isn't the nice 1-inch rainfall event that they need. And certainly we're going to have to wait around here a little bit longer to get some rainfall. Temperatures are warming in the next couple of days, but I'm watching a front that's going to slide through on Monday into Tuesday, and that's going to bring us a chance of getting some rain through here. So that'll be nice and at least put an end to the brief warm-up we will be seeing on Saturday and Sunday. Not getting into any dangerous temperatures again, but it will warm up. So yeah, this recent time period and the precipitation we've gotten, if you ask me what it's done, it's kind of fragmented in, you know, anything that we thought we knew about where there might be a garden spot across the Corn Belt. And I just don't like to see the fact that some very productive ground in Illinois and Iowa and Indiana has really missed out on this rainfall.
Anything in week two of the forecast?
Well, that's the tricky part. The pattern is setting up such that we've got this broader ridge that's spreading out west. So extreme heat in California right now and a lot of thunderstorms over the NM out west. And so anything that we're going to get is going to have to roll around that ridge, which means it's going to come in from the northwest. And with that Canadian storm track, again, we're going to be relying on frontal passages, although they're very weak and they often stall out and they're nowhere anything like what we typically get in spring and fall and winter. So week two precipitation forecast, every model run tells us some new story. They keep bouncing around with it. Overall, though, this is the kind of pattern where we only have maybe 3 days of decent guidance in precipitation. So we're going to have to watch it carefully because model-to-model run on the on week two right now is all over the place. So it's something that the early model runs called it for a very wet week, and then all of a sudden the morning model runs came in, and now they're dry for next week. And so we're going to continue to see that while this pattern is set up the way it is.
Well, I'm going to go searching. If I can't get any rainfall out of the westerlies, what about out of the Atlantic Ocean? I know we're in that August time frame. We talk about hurricanes, and I'm thinking more about rainfall that would come off the western coast of Africa, kind of like a bowling alley heads for the Gulf of Mexico or somewhere. And sometimes we get rainfall off the backside of those.
Yeah, we can. And so we're, of course, talking about tropical season. And right about now, you're right. Beginning of August is when the distribution of tropical cyclones historically really begins to rise. And we reach a peak around September 10th. So we're watching a few things right now. Not much going on in the Caribbean or in the Gulf of Mexico. Yeah, there's a lot of thunderstorms down there, but we're not expecting them to organize into a low pressure system, which could become a tropical depression or tropical storm. But the easterly waves, these are think of them as like bundles of thunderstorms coming off of the west coast of Africa. They're cranking up right now. And the upper levels of the atmosphere are becoming more conducive to their development. So we're watching the deep in the upper levels of the atmosphere, basically taking the lid off so we can get some of these storms to roll. But they're right now sucking in a lot of really dry and dusty air. So it's going to take quite a bit for them to get going. So I would just tell you this. Right now, I will be focusing pretty heavily every single day when I forecast just to see the evolution of these storms as they go across the open Atlantic, because as you said, August is the time of year where we start to see that stuff really moving, and it could become a problem as we just get more closer to the climatological peak of hurricane season.
Well, let's switch sides and the Pacific Ocean, El Nino.
Yeah, so El Nino, like we talked about the last couple weeks, has kind of faded. And so we've lost our strongly what we call westerly wind bursts, and they're now back to normal trade winds, even at times faster than normal trade winds. So that tells us that the influence of El Nino is pretty much gone. It's more La Nina-like, to say the least. What's interesting to see is how this is playing out with very, very warm waters that are tucked away in the Gulf of Alaska. So off of British Columbia, there off the western coast of North America, there's just a large blob of very warm water. And the interplay between that and what's going on in the equatorial Pacific means that the longer term forecast is favoring more troughing over the Great Lakes, over the Hudson Bay. Now, translate all that just to make it simple. It takes the major risk of heat, makes it less probable as we progress through the month of August through the Eastern Corn Belt. That's what that Pacific warm blob might do for us. So I'll be watching it carefully. Of course, I don't have a ton of confidence. It's just one feature to watch, but it's one I'll be watching carefully.
On the heat note, it's hot, hot, hot in Paris today.
Yeah, they were scorched. I think yesterday they broke not just, you know, individual day records, but all-time records in parts of France, the Netherlands, Belgium, and parts of Germany. So this is setting new all-time records for any day of the year for some of those places. But the heat is breaking finally today for some of those folks. And meanwhile, don't forget, while that big ridge sat over Western Europe, Ukraine, the Russian Wheat Belt, Kazakhstan, Turkey, those places had cooler than average weather and they had some rainfall. So that was favorable for those areas while they're absolutely baking and burning. We had a lot of fires going in France as well during this. So that's taken a major hit on ag in Western Europe right now.
Hey, one final thing. Have you seen any views of the globe from the satellites and what they show as far as vegetation across the planet?
Yeah, so one of the things we look at is called NDVI, the Normalized Difference Vegetation Index. I think that's something a lot of farmers are familiar with. And what we like to do is we like to compare the current year to the previous year. It's a good reference point. And when I look across the globe, okay, there's a few areas that jump out at me. Of course, the Corn Belt does. It doesn't look anything like it did a year ago. Much, much lower vegetative health. If you look at an index of that, it's much lower. But if you go over to parts of India and China, some of China's major growing regions and also the whole of India is not looking as good as it did a year ago either. Now, we are expecting some bigger rains in China starting mid to end of next week. That'll go through in and around Beijing, both north and south of there, which is where they grow a lot of crop. And the Indian monsoon is once again cranking up. But it's been pretty interesting to say that we've actually not had any major tropical cyclone development in the tropical Western Pacific yet. And that is very rare. So we've got some interesting things going on globally. And that NDVI image helps us see how the vegetation responds to it.
Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Eric Snodgrass is with Agrible and Nutrien Ag Solutions. Joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. Commodity Week is coming up next. You're listening to Illinois Public Media, willag.org.